So I watched like the first three episodes of that anime I was talking about last time.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of like, okay, this is weird, but whatever.
Uh-huh.
I watched a little bit further. It is simultaneously the most wholesome and degenerate shit I have ever seen.
That sounds about right.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that watched an ice cream boy turn into an ice cream man to ice cream melt all the fucking floor. I'm your host, Stephen Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared! Can you just watch out? There's a little bit of soup there.
Well, if the anime you told me you've been watching, ooh.
You know, I will say, it's very prophetic because for those of us that are men that like women... It really is a transition in your life from boyhood to manhood, being manipulated by a stronger and smarter and more powerful woman than you into doing something that will cause your own destruction. That's just, it's a canon event.
I'm with you on that one.
Usually, as it happens as a teenager, Eric is a late bloomer. That's fine.
Jared, did you enjoy that one? Did you have a good time?
So, I was spoiled not on what was going to happen, but that there was something happening because Steven said, we're watching this one together.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, something has to happen. And so I'm doing the math in my mind, and I'm like, oh, it can't be that interesting because there's one of two obvious votes. Like, and my final three prediction right now seems very safe. When I predicted very early in the season that it was Ceri, Parv, and Amanda, after their talk on the boat, feels very safe now. The path to get there, very different from the one I imagined,
right?
But it feels, you know, as long as Natalie doesn't win immunity, kind of feels like that's what's going to happen. But I was like, yeah, there's only like there's two votes here. There's only one immunity. If they get the idol, well, then it's not going to be that interesting. It'll probably be Amanda. And so I was like, well, Eric is probably going to win this challenge. And I kept being like, what is the thing that can happen? Thinking there might be like a twist in the game. And I did think a couple times early on, like, maybe they'll just try to get rid of immunity somehow, but like, we don't have any mechanics for that. There shouldn't be mechanics for that. So like, what are we, he'd have to give it up willingly. And nobody's that dumb.
Even the show is telling us no one's that dumb.
There's so much to talk about in this episode, and we're going to, and I'll probably say it again, but like, huge fucking shout out to the editors for learning previous lessons and not being afraid to make an episode not about the vote. Like, I mean, it is about the vote. It's about getting rid of Eric, but like, they show every single vote.
Correct.
Because who fucking cares?
At this point, doesn't even matter.
I feel like in previous seasons, though we haven't seen something this crazy happen, they would have tried to make it like, they would have tried to stitch together footage of Ceri and Parv being like, we could do it. Maybe we should get rid of Amanda.
Right.
And try to make it that, when like, that's not the interesting story.
No.
That's not the fun thing.
The interesting story is dunking this man into the ground for doing a thing that he should not have done.
I can't believe I thought Jason was the dumbest player on this season. No, he still is. Eric got manipulated. Jason is dumb on his own.
Correct. And I'm spoiling a little bit for 45 minutes later. I may not be as hard on Eric as you will.
I don't think I'll be that hard on Eric, actually.
Okay.
It'll be fun to talk about.
All right.
But anyway, how's your week going, Steven?
It's going all right. Saw a show, went out for drinks with friends on Wednesday. So, like, it's been a busy-ish week. I recorded some stuff. So I'm feeling it a little this weekend where I'm like, I just want to lay
in bed. Recorded some stuff?
I recorded auditions.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, have you been cheating on me?
Yeah. I actually have a second podcast. It's actually another Survivor podcast.
Oh, I was gonna say, is it the Big Brother Turning Back Time podcast?
No, because then I would be the one out of the loop in that one.
You're not comfortable with that?
No, I am absolutely comfortable with that. I'm just saying it would be a very different podcast for me.
That's fair. That's fair.
How about you? How was your week?
I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I am a husk of a man.
Hmm.
Since Steve and I last recorded, I got an offer to direct with a theater this summer, which is lovely, and I'm super excited. It's Imposters Theater here in Chicago. I'm so happy to be working with them. I cannot state that enough.
What's the kicker, Jared?
I had to view like 75, 80, or some odd, I don't even remember, a ton of audition submissions in a very short time frame and turn around for callbacks in less than a week. while I'm also casting another show, while I'm also directing another show. So all of those schedules do work out, because the two shows that I'm directing at the same time are both play festivals, so I have some flexibility. I have not directed in a year, and so all of my projects have just come at the same time. I wish they would have been spread out, but here we are.
As someone who has done two shows at the same time, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, I will have callbacks again in like 16 hours, and I was in callbacks an hour ago.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
It was kind of funny seeing some people, because I had in-person auditions on Thursday for a different theater for than I had callbacks for today, and I'd see... There's a couple people I saw them at the in-person auditions for this theater, and then I would go home and watch the self-tapes, and I was like, you're the same person. It's the same monologue. Because, like, why wouldn't it be? It's two separate theaters with different casting teams and directing teams, and actors only have so many monologues to choose from.
And yet.
But I was like, this is funny. I literally just saw you in person 2 hours ago. It's fun. Theater's fun. I'm a sleepy boy, though.
You're a sleepy boy.
I'm a sleepy boy.
Well, I'm going to give you some good news here on mic. Michaela is coming home with free pizza.
Ah, interesting.
So that's a good time.
Unfortunately, I will probably be gone by then to go get dinner with a friend who's also in town this weekend.
Oh my God,
they picked
Jared.
The worst weekend to be in town. And I'm going to a birthday party that will go late into the night tonight. And
you crazy, man.
Then we have D&D tomorrow.
And we have D&D tomorrow.
Yeah, which I need to prep for. So.
Okay. I want to keep this intro bit short because we have a lot of emails.
Of course we do. However, I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. However, give me... speed run, make a list of top five interesting things for you. I don't care what this list is. I'm putting a list in front of your face of top five. Title the list, and we'll go from there.
Of interesting what?
I don't know. You have to make the list.
I don't understand the prompt, Steven.
I'm giving you blank list. There is no title on this list. Top
just
five.
List five things?
Top five of what?
Okay.
To confuse your sleepy brain.
Sure, okay. And I also want to save all that stuff before. I'm very thankful and grateful to be having all this happen, and I'm super excited.
Yes.
Don't take this as complaints. I, like, booked and blessed. Very thankful for it. Worked very hard for it, and people very happy that people want to hire me. In no particular order.
Okay.
White cheddar, pepper jack, blue cheese... sharp cheddar.
Hmm.
Yeah, I like good sharp cheddar. And Parmesan.
Nice. Top five cheeses?
Top five cheeses.
Have I ever told you the, you know how you do like kid plays in elementary school where you sing like five songs and there are some lines and everybody says one line?
Yeah.
I think it was third or fourth grade. We did one all about cheese. Everyone was cheeses.
Okay.
There was a cheese wrap.
Oh.
Jared, there was a cheese wrap.
Yeah.
It wasn't good.
That's also a canon event. I'm sorry.
I don't remember which cheese I was, but the...
What a fucking Minnesota sentence.
The cheese that had the wrap was sharp cheddar, and I remember that very clearly. A kid named Travis, who was legitimately like a cool kind of kid. I'm sharp cheddar. It was hilarious.
Wow. It was, yeah, no, that sounds horrible.
It was bad.
And was this for the parents of the kids in the school?
Yeah, probably.
Or like a classroom exercise just for each other?
No, no, no. Parents were invited.
That sucks for those parents. That just sucks.
Oh, no. I am so sorry for this child.
No, I mean, like, let's be real. Like, parents don't... Those, like, sure, you can be proud. And I don't know. I don't have a kid. Maybe it is different. But, like, you're not... You're there and you're proud, but like you're also kind of dreading it a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I went to like band shows and stuff in school and we weren't good. Like, you know, you're not, it's different. You're there to support, but that doesn't mean you're not sitting there going, woof, okay, yeah.
Funny story, one of those adults went on to dissemble the Department of Education for the United States of America. Just kidding, that's a joke, but it's a real thing that is
what?
Happening.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant, and I was like, like one of the employees, or like Linda McMahon was one of the adults in your Minnesota school district?
Certainly not. She was too busy being a character on WWE.
And running the business.
Getting choke slammed into the turf.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know what else gets choke slammed into the turf? Emails. If you want to email us, feel free to do so. SurvivorTBT@gmail.com or message us on Reddit, u/SurvivorTBT, or on Patreon. You can follow us on Patreon, message us there. A lot of emails.
It's been so long since we've recorded.
It's been like a week and a half, a full week at least.
About a week, yeah. And this is the longest I go without seeing you. We are fully codependent.
I'm just hold your hand a little bit here.
Okay. I'll commit to this bit forever.
Wait. Oh, okay. I thought your knuckles were really hairy. They're not.
Well, they're a little hairy.
Your forearm is hairier
than
mine.
I'm so hairy.
Are you just a hairy guy?
Yeah. It's the Polish in me.
Mm.
The Eastern European, generally. I also have, like, some Czech, some Slovak. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, anyway. You could all imagine that, make an animatic of that.
Yeah, now that one's free.
Yeah.
Next one will cost you.
From Tyler. Tyler says, in 2010, Ozzy appeared on season 2 of American Ninja Warrior, but fell on the third obstacle in the qualifying round.
Ah.
Yeah. I know this is late, but this is one of the only chances I've really had to go into a little more detail about the Johnny Fairplay stuff, since this season has been so packed with post-game player information. So, I mentioned way back in Pearl Island that Johnny Fairplay's first wife and mother of his first child had been on America's Next Top Model, so they had met through the reality TV circuit, but forgot to mention that prior to that, she had been a wrestler, so they also had that in common. In 2011, she appeared on a revived edition of WWE Tough Enough to compete for a WWE contract, but she ended up quitting in episode 3 because she missed her child. So I'm pretty confident that makes Johnny Fairplay's child the only child to have both their parents basically quit separate reality TV shows and cite the child as a reason for it. So that's pretty great.
Kid's got magnetic riz.
Yeah, I can't leave this child. Can't do it. Mentioned that Johnny Fairplay had competed on a Survivor mini edition of Sequester. If you remember way back when I talked about John Carroll from Marquesas, Sequester is an only reality game hosted by Big Brother contestant who had competed in and won a Survivor online game prior to Big Brother. What in the world? I'm not putting these strings together. Each round has different rules to adapt to, and someone is eliminated until a jury votes on the final two. I'm going to try to keep an updated list on the placements for the Survivor Mini that took place in 2020. And so for right now, we have John Carroll and Johnny Fairplay.
Okay.
Finally, I know Steven knows this, but I don't know how far Jared got into the season. But on House of Villains, John made it to the finale at Final 5, but failed to make it to the final 3, the final episode, but failed to make Final 3 to face the jury.
Gotcha. I thought he faced the jury. Full transparency, I know that Fairplay plugged it when he was on our podcast. I tried to watch one episode with Steven, and I fell asleep.
It's not for everybody.
It wasn't not for me.
But, like, it's reality TV at its core.
Yeah.
In the reality portion.
Yeah, which is not my favorite part of it.
Not the competition portion, which I know is what we like.
Yeah.
But, again, it is what it is. It's very... There was a show on VH1 where, like, celebrities, like D-list celebrities, went into a house and did something very similar.
That tracks. I don't know what it's called, but yeah, that sounds about right.
I remember one season they had, like, Vern Troyer and...
I don't even fucking know who that is.
Mini-Me from Austin Powers.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to Connor. Connor's episode 11 and 12 email. So here is the Jason story with Chet. First off, he may have changed his ways, but I don't want to call him a flat-out homophobe. He's friends with some LGBTQ+ Survivor alumni and has hung out with Todd Herzog a lot, at least back in the day. Anyway, there used to be a podcast that covered all things Survivor in Australia called Survivor Oz. They interviewed players, got their takes on the best players, favorite seasons, etc. The episode called the Survivor Secrets episode, it featured Kathy, Colby, and Billy Garcia giving all the scoop on questions on body functions on the island, food sources, bathroom uses, things missed, health problems they had.
Hey, we've had one third of those people on.
Sex on the island, that is true. Production secrets, and even what contestants do for self-pleasure. Oh my goodness.
Wow, those are some bold interviewers.
Yeah.
Better interviewers than you and I. Listen, we don't know Billy's masturbation habits. We're too much of cowards to ask about that.
I didn't care to ask. I still don't care to ask.
We're cowards. Billy, write in.
No, please don't. I don't want to know. I don't want to know what gets you excited in the jungle sand.
Yeah, I'm good, actually. That was a bit. Please take that as a bit.
Hilarious episode. I'll share a few stories from the episode. Jason apparently accused of hitting on him and snuggled up to him during the night. He made a huge fuss about it to the whole tribe, and Kathy said that Chet replied, "I wouldn't hit on you if you were the last gay man on Earth." I don't know if this was before Jason hid the machete and Kathy, Tracy, and Chet made the new shelter. If you notice in episode 12, when Alexis is voted out, she has a cast on her foot.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Her, James, and Eric snuck into production camp and smuggled peanut butter and Gatorade and were caught by production in the middle of the night. And while all three ran, James injured his finger. Alexis busted her knee. This was confirmed by Kathy in the episode.
Wait, so he didn't cut it on a clamshell and she didn't trip coming back. This is because they raided production camp?
Correct.
Holy and got shit. Caught. Wow.
Also, when Billy said he went to the bathroom, sorry, I want to give you proper time to react
no,
to that.
No, yeah, that's insane. And it also kind of explains a little even more, just besides James being stoic and not wanting medical to look at his finger because he didn't want to go home and he didn't think it was a big deal, like another reason to not make it a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Another thought, this was also confirmed by Kathy in the episode. When Billy said he went to the bathroom, he said he looked up at a cameraman who was looking straight at him, and he screamed and ran back to camp. That's funny. He was shocked because production is not allowed to follow you if you go by yourself somewhere. My question is, do you think Alexis's big blunder was sending Amanda to exile?
Yeah.
I know she wanted to have Natalie and Ceri to see their families, but her emotion took over and gave Amanda the time to get the idol. She should have sent Ceri. I think this move by fans, mainly Natalie and Alexis, could have paid off big time.
I mean, I think that there's an alternate reality where she sends Ceri and literally the exact same episode happens, except Ceri has the idol. Because it doesn't seem like the clues were that difficult
No. For
Amanda's time. And Ceri's very smart. And I, like, unlike Parv, I think Ceri would actually look for the idol if she's on exile. So it could have ended up going the same way. Like, we'll never know. But I think that the other thing is that they were like, we're going to get rid of Eric. For sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if we don't, we have the numbers.
Sure.
But, man, going after Amanda when you were like, don't go after the person you sent to exile.
That is a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on to Josh K's email. Josh says, I finally caught up. Obligatory sorry for the long email. It's pretty lengthy. Here we go.
Oh, my.
A girthy email.
How do you self-pleasure that email, Josh?
No.
I hated that. I want to cut it.
To clarify, a note from my previous message you slightly missed. I mentioned having listened to 60,000 plus minutes of podcasts in 2024, according to Spotify Wrapped, so yep. It didn't include December, which is approximately 41.6 days worth of podcasts, and you guys were number two. Hey.
Thank you. Also, are you okay? Because that's a month and a week out of 11 months. Just straight. That you were just, that doesn't include sleeping or nothing. That means like roughly like 9% of your time in a 24-hour day is podcasts every day.
I listen to them or watch movies during work.
Ah, yeah. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. I listen to Nintendo radio so that I don't get distracted.
Fair.
We all have our thing. Going back to NFL playoffs, it was mentioned you watched the Vikings-Rams playoff game.
Yep.
Yeah. So sorry. First,
it was so upsetting because I couldn't even make fun of Steven. I just had to feel sorry for him.
Yeah. First, I'm still salty about the fumble on the opening Packers-Eagles kickoff. It probably wouldn't have changed the outcome, but still, on another note, I watched the 2016 Packers-Cowboys playoff game with my college roommate, who's an avid Cowboys fan. I knew this was dangerous because there was already a Dez dropped it or caught it, if your opinion is wrong.
That's 2014. Pretty sure, because those playoffs for the NFC were cursed. So the Lions played the Cowboys in the wild card round. Brandon Pettigrew, our tight end, was very clearly fouled against. Like, he was tackled before the ball got to him. The refs threw the flag and picked it back up. Cowboys win the game. That was on, like, fourth down, driving for us to win the game. Then the Cowboys face the Packers. Dez catches the ball. They say he doesn't. Packers win. Then the Packers face the Seahawks. The Seahawks kick an onside kick. It bounces off of Brandon Bostic's helmet. He recovers it. Seahawks win the game.
Does this just live inside your brain now?
Yes. Yeah, I can't remember what I ate for breakfast, but I can remember that series of events.
To spark your memory, this is the game where Rodgers completed it to Jared Cook on the sideline, then Mason Crosby hits a 50-yarder twice to win. The moment Rodgers had the ball with over a minute left, I knew we were going to rip out his heart again.
Yeah.
Great for me, horrible for him, and he spent the rest of the night going on a 5-star police chase in GTA 5 to get his anger out. That's funny.
Yeah, maybe it might have been in 2015, but I'm pretty sure it was a 2014 season, or unless there's another time this happened, it very well could be.
We have things to add to the wheel. So, items to add to the bonus wheel. In September 2023, my friends dogged me for the 100th time about how I haven't watched enough movies. I now have a list compiled from them, my parents, and various podcasts of movies I need to watch. That is at 1,200 and counting. Ooh.
You're never getting through that.
I've watched 322.
You might be getting through that.
Yeah. What are your top five favorite, maybe not best, movies, and what are your top five objectively best movies you've watched? Bonus top five musical movies? Hell yeah.
Are there even five good musical movies?
Jared.
There are, but there's not that many.
Oh, Jared.
The problem is musical movies are afraid to be musicals, and so they...
Now they are.
Now they are. It's true. Except for Wicked. Wicked was not.
Yeah.
Are we answering this now?
No.
Okay.
This is for the hold your thoughts. I know you did a movie one recently, so I added number four to this list if you would prefer for that for the wheel. Number two, you guys talk about various board/video games you like. There's a YouTube channel called No Rolls Barred that is awesome. I have watched their entire back catalog. What they're best known for is their work that grew the game Blood on the Clock Tower.
Oh, I've heard of that, yeah.
Social deduction game akin to Werewolf.
Yeah.
Except once you die, you still participate in the game. Maybe I'll twist that and it'll just be board games since we did one video games already.
Sure.
But I'll think about it. And number three, Jared is afraid of open water and Steven worked on a cruise ship. I am definitely with Steven on the open waters experience. I've been on 7 cruises in my life, as well as traveling to Singapore, China, Romania, plus other various travels around the country. To Mexico and Canada. Where were your favorite 3 places you have traveled to? Where do you want to go?
That's also the wheel?
That's also the wheel, yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't talk about it yet.
Okay. It sucks because I don't want to take boats anywhere, and now, because of recent changes with America's government and funding and a department named after a Shiba Inu from 2010... I'm also more paranoid to fly.
Mm.
So traveling is now an anxiety-ridden experience for Jared.
Sure.
Despite my ever passionate longing for travel.
Yeah. I'm going to read the number 4. I might just put it on the list anyway. I've caught you both referencing several TV shows. What are your 3 to 5 shows that you reference/quote the most?
Mm-hmm.
Mine would be Scrubs, Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Good Place, and Futurama.
Okay.
All good lists. And there's a lot more stuff here, like updated his lists. You remember the list of favorite seasons to listen to, our favorite gags. I'm going to hold this for our mailbag episode because it may take us a while. So I want to hold that for now.
But thank you, Josh.
Yeah, thank you. That is awesome. I want to do this one and then I might move on because we're getting, one or two more. This one from Reed. Reed says, "Hey guys, my name is Reed, and a few months ago, I began binging old Survivor seasons, beginning with Vanuatu. I started listening to the pod on a regular basis during Palau, and even though I'm on Tokachins now, I love listening to you guys talk about Micronesia and the banter in general. You guys do great, and listening to you honestly feels like I'm having a conversation with my friends. Hope you keep it up." Well, you know what?
Thank you, Reed.
That's what we're doing. Hanging out.
That's the vibe.
Talking shit about people on Survivor with my buddy.
I literally, the way I talk about the show with Steven would be exactly the same if there wasn't the podcast. Maybe not for as long,
right?
But it would be, this is how we talk. So, yeah.
Yeah. Any sort of commentary I have would be the exact same. Laying out an entire episode for you, probably wouldn't do that.
Yeah, obviously.
Are you sure? I could do it.
You would just be getting my thoughts in individual texts as I was watching episodes.
That is true. That is something you do.
Yes.
I got two things I'd love to hear you talk about if you get the time. First is a theory I have about the fire-making competitions. I won't spoil anything about fire-making for future seasons, but I can say that this theory has not yet been attempted. It seems like the contestants are provided with lots of wood to get this thing going. I have no idea if this is allowed, but I've always wondered how effective it would be to make a platform slash mound out of wood and then place the husk on top of that. You could probably build some sort of wooden structure, a teepee could work, that could nearly reach the string, then place and light your husk so that it immediately engulfs the string in flames. Am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy. I think that we have seen, even just in the first 16 seasons, we've seen fires that, like, lick the ropes but don't catch fire, so you'd have to have something a little more substantial. It's not like us, like, just the fire touching it's going to immediately ignite that string. I also wouldn't be surprised if there's a rule against that.
As far as I know, there is a rule saying that your supplies cannot touch the string.
Okay. Because, like, if you were making a platform, I don't know, man. I wonder.
I think you could theoretically make a platform. However, they're not giving you, like, boards of wood.
That's true.
It would be difficult to keep your magnesium shavings in the platform because there will be gaps between these sticks.
Yeah.
Like, if you made a husk bowl to hold it, I think it's possible.
You know what I will say? Like, I think that for 99% of people, it'll just be easier to make a fire that's big enough because fire consumes and, like, that's just going to be quicker. I would have tried it if I was Sundra or Becky. I certainly would have tried if I was one of the two of them after that long.
Other problem, fire goes up.
Fire go up.
So if you have something underneath, it consumes things differently going downward than upward.
Yeah.
Like, it won't, like...
Well, that kind of is a point in Reed's favor, that the fire doesn't burn down.
Yeah, but then your platform won't catch.
Which you don't need it to.
You're right.
You're making a torch at that point, basically.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Until they tell you you can't do it, somebody can try it.
Nobody says you can't light a golden retriever on fire.
I would absolutely tell you that.
The rules of Survivor don't say that.
The rules of America tell you don't do that.
We're in Fiji, baby. Please don't light dogs on fire. Please. I shouldn't have to say that. No. I don't think I have to.
That was a bit, you see. Oh, second thing I want to ask about are character arcs or archetypes that you are typically drawn to. For example, you have people who seem to effectively maintain control from start to finish and then don't experience life on the bottom for any extended period of time. Then there are people who seemingly have to fight for their life every day. I find myself to root for a character. I need to see them at the top and the bottom, like Suri in Panama. Even though I think they've played great games, seasons with winners like Yule and Earl disappoint me a bit because I've never felt like they were an underdog. And even those are my favorite characters to root for. Even when you guys would bash Terry, I always wanted him to win just because he had to fight for his life every single day. Do you guys find you gravitate toward a certain playstyle or character arc?
Well, people love an underdog.
Yeah.
And with someone like Yule and Earl, you really have to look in the subtleties of how they stay on top. But I want you to answer this one first, Steven.
Okay.
Because I don't want to influence your answer.
I do find myself being pulled toward an underdog. I do also find myself being pulled toward charismatic in unconventional ways. So if someone is like your typical charming, handsome, like, ringleader type.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
Hmm.
However,
so like a Tom, you don't care.
I don't really care.
Okay.
Like, I will cheer for Tom sometimes, but, like, as far as my, what I'm being pulled to, I would rather have someone like, I guess in that season, an Ian.
Hmm. Okay.
Who is kind of flawed, kind of quirky. He has these things about him that you're like, that's so weird. All right, I'm bought in.
You're Eric's?
Yeah, you're Eric's. I kind of, yeah. I like Eric. He is not a good Survivor player, though.
I don't think he's terrible,
though. I don't think he's terrible either. Don't get me wrong. He made one big mistake that...
Well, he made a lot of small mistakes that ended up being... That culminated into one big mistake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doubling down on those mistakes. Was that... Did you want to add anything else to that?
No, I think that's good. Go ahead.
Yes. And I think, like, being drawn to underdogs is very natural. I'm not always drawn to underdogs by their position in the game. I'm sometimes drawn to them by their... By who they are. So, like, Ceree is an underdog. Like... That's why the couch narrative was so popular. That's mm-hmm. why she was a star in Panama, because she, like, people could identify with her, and because they were like, oh, she is not made to win Survivor. And that goes in multiple ways. Like, and I think you can tell from listening to the way I have opinions on the show, like, I gravitate towards strong women. I was raised by really strong women. So, like, I fucking love the Black Widows Alliance. Like, I think it's really fun.
Like muscle mommies or someone who's very intelligent and runs the show?
More the latter, but also, I guess, the former.
Okay.
The problem, in Survivor, I do feel like the people that are more physical are also usually more boring. Mm. Like, Alicia was a physical monster, but she was kind of boring on the show.
She had one of the most iconic blow-ups on Survivor.
Yeah, but I don't... That's Real Housewives shit, man. That's just screaming at each other, like, I don't care about that.
Sure.
And I like people that can tell a story. I like your... I mean, these aren't exactly dark horse picks, but, like, your Rob Cesarinos, your Amandas, your people that you get them in front of a camera and they know who they are. And they understand what's going on.
Mm.
I have a hard time with people that don't. I don't love the athlete types. I don't love the people that are giving the press conferences.
Mm-hmm.
I want people that are creating a narrative on the show, even if it's a very flawed narrative. And I like flawed people and flawed characters too. That's why I really like Todd in China. Despite, I mean, obviously he's a winner, so you get a lot of him, and you want to like him more. But he's a flawed winner. Like, he has these really big, like, vendettas against people and has these flaws that make him more human than just, like, your golden boy.
Aren't we all?
Just
flawed boys.
Sure.
Anyway, I know that was long-winded, so hopefully you get through it. Love the show. Hope you guys keep making it.
We will.
Don't you worry. We will. And we do have more emails. I'm going to save it for email mailbag. So, once again, thank you all. Lots of good stuff.
And I don't think we've heard from you before, Reed, so thank you.
No, yeah. That's why I wanted to get to this. Like, show some appreciation. A lot of our regulars are going to be heard in the mailbag, so.
Sure.
Big.
We'll have, that's going to be, listen, get ready for a 6-hour mailbag.
Yeah. Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on May 8th of 2008. I just pulled one thing that happened in the week between episodes. Well, I guess it's technically two, but it's one. Dmitry Medvedev is sworn in as the third president of the Russian Federation. And then the next day, Dmitry Medvedev appoints Vladimir Putin as Russian prime minister.
Correct.
Because the constitution of Russia at the time said, hey, you can't be president forever. So he said, sure, I'll put in a lackey. And I know we have at least one listener in Moscow. So I'm sorry. The number one song on the charts was still Bleeding Love. And the top five movies are Harold and Kumar, Escape from Guantanamo Bay, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Baby Mama, Maid of Honor. That's M-A-D-E of Honor, by the way. But number one, Iron Man.
Mm.
Steven, are you familiar with Iron Man?
I'm quite familiar with Iron Man.
Here's what Rotten Tomatoes says about Iron Man, though we should all know it. A billionaire industrialist and genius inventor, Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., is conducting weapons tests overseas, but terrorists kidnap him to force him to build a devastating weapon. Instead, he builds an armored suit and upends his captors. Returning to America, Stark refines the suit and uses it to combat crime and terrorism. That's it. Sometimes it's really interesting to hear a movie that you know so well be described in like five sentences. You're like, those are the bullet points, I suppose.
And it's also, it has no context of what happened after it.
Yeah.
Where it became this societal phenomenon. It sparked
the start of the MCU.
Yeah.
It changed the trajectory of superhero movies forever.
It was the perfect movie at the perfect time for Marvel to be like, ah, yes, now we can make this work. All right.
Yeah. What do you think it's rated on Rotten Tomatoes, Steven?
Interesting.
I know, right? This is at its time.
This is at its time. I think it's not going to be quite as good as I think it's going to be, because people aren't going to be looking back, or at least critics aren't going to be looking back and be like, ah, it revolutionized superhero movies. So I'm going to go with a critic score of 86, an audience score of 89.
It's higher than that.
Dang.
Yeah, a critic score of 94, an audience score of 91, with the consensus being powered by Robert Downey Jr.'s vibrant charm, Iron Man turbocharges the superhero genre with a deft intelligence and infectious sense of fun.
It also revived Robert Downey Jr.'s career.
Yeah. Yeah, he had some legal problems, some substance abuse problems. I don't think he was paid that much for Iron Man because he was seen as such a liability that it was like they were taking a risk on him, and then he made shmoney after that.
Make the shmoney. He made so many movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you watched that movie recently?
No.
It's fascinating because, like, he's taking the, like, oh, I'm a billionaire playboy, like, whatever. But also, it takes, like, weird anti-war
I do remember
stances
that, yeah.
And how America is shooting itself in the foot at various times, and I'm like, huh.
Yeah, I mean,
this is fascinating for you, like, simultaneously promoting American military, but also saying, we're fucking up.
This is around the time, or just before this, that the war in Iraq got really, really unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember, Obama ran on never voting for the Iraq war, mm-hmm. and, like, that was a big deal. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense for a movie coming out in spring of 2008.
Sure. All right. Cool. Anything else?
That's it.
Then let us get into the episode. Episode 13, If It Smells Like a Rat, Give It Cheese.
This was not the best quote of the episode.
No.
This episode has so many fucking quotes.
But they wanted to not spoil what was going to happen.
Sure.
And I feel like a few of the best quotes would have spoiled what was going to happen.
That's fair.
They buried this in the next time on. I was expecting any sort of hint like, and one survivor makes the biggest mistake ever.
Yeah, you're right.
Nothing.
Hmm. Weird.
Anyway, we open the episode, and Amanda says, hey, I didn't have the idol when I said I didn't have it. I got it afterward. Pa-pow!
Technically correct. The best kind of correct.
Yeah.
It's interesting and refreshing to see Suri respect her game on this and be like, she didn't tell me, and I passed the test of trust. And it was a good test because I was like this close to going to rocks for her. And that worked out really well for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That's so weird, though. Did she pass the test?
Yeah.
Because she voted against it.
Yeah, but that conversation that we saw last episode with like, hey, I love you. I wish I could keep you around. I'm not going to rocks for you, though. And Amanda saying, if I had the idol or like if I could save myself, if you could vote this person, would you? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it was probably also a longer conversation than we saw, mm-hmm. but like Suri says that she was really close to going to rocks, and I believe her, and I think Amanda believes her.
It's a thin line, and you know what? Whatever works for both of them, they're like, yeah, we're still bros. Whatever. Keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason why I think it's better to have those conversations and go, hey, this sucks, but I have to do it,
mm-hmm.
rather than just like being like, that person's dead to me, because you never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And then Eric says, oh, Amanda made me feel like a fool. Oh, you only knew.
Oh, did she?
Yes.
Yeah, he starts off this episode angry at her.
Mm-hmm. He is all over the place in this episode. He's feeling emotional, and he's feeling like this is all very personal.
I said this to you before the episode started, after we got done watching it, while we were getting our mic set up, because I couldn't hold it in anymore, that Eric is Mr. Meeseeks. He was meant to be gone in this game long before, and he lived too long, and shit was getting weird. Because he doesn't know which way is up, and he is being wrapped around these women's finger in ways that are really fun for us to watch.
He's simultaneously feeling the power. Like, I'm in a powerful position right now. I feel like I could go on a run with immunity streaks and nobody can stop me. And people are coming to me to ask me these questions. And also, simultaneously, screwing this up, being like, I have no social game. I'm trying to commit with everyone, but I can't commit with everyone because I'm getting caught immediately.
Jeff ends the episode with, that's what we call a life lesson. And I think there's more life lessons than he even realizes in this. And I hope that Eric realized in that part of why Eric falls apart this episode and has this fall from grace is because he's too good of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so worried about everyone else's feelings that, first of all, he's afraid to say no to everybody or anybody. There's also some self-serving stuff in that. But I also think that, like, the person that's in front of him and is nice to him and is like, we should do this together, he'll go, yeah, sure, why not? And then he goes, ah, shit, 5 minutes ago I said that to somebody else. It felt real then. Like, sometimes you just have to say the hard thing. Like, that's just a good life lesson. He's so young.
He's young. He is figuring this all out. And I guarantee after Survivor happened, like, he feels differently about how he played. Feels if he played now, I'm sure he would play remarkably different.
Well, and let's not forget that this is we start this episode on what, like, episode 3 or in a row of Eric losing votes, of Eric being told one thing and something else happening, and not really having anybody that he feels like he can trust.
Correct.
Every time he feels like he can trust people, they go home, or the opposite, or like something else happens.
He's in a bad place, and he's got to shake things up, and I can't fault him for trying to shake things up.
Now, one thing I do want to call out for, and this is, we're putting a lot of this stuff in the front because I think it's important for everything else that happens through the rest of the episode.
Sure.
We get a lot of talk that he doesn't have votes on the jury.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not true, but I think everyone told him. We're just gaslighting him.
Right.
And with great effect. Because, like, what did he do to Eliza? Nothing.
Nothing.
He voted for her, but so did literally everyone else but Jason.
Mm-hmm.
You did not do anything personally to Eliza. Okay. Move to Jason. Again, I think he voted for Jason, but, like, so did everyone else that's up there. So I don't think there's any personal bad blood with Jason. If there is, it's interpersonal and hard to suss out. James, you were in an alliance, like, not really alliance, but, like, you were on the outs.
You did nothing
at the same time as James, and, like, were kind of, like, with him. Ozzy, you had his back to the end. That's, he will probably vote for you while you're up there because he's bitter. Like, that's immediately four people that I'm like, you don't have actually any problems with these people at all. So where are you getting this idea that you have no friends on the jury? And it's like, oh, right, there's four different women telling you this every single moment that you're with them.
Because he has no friends at camp.
Yeah. And he lacks the self-confidence to be like, no, I do. Those people do like me, actually.
Oof. My actions stand for themselves. And there's something to be said about just being a likable person.
Yeah.
It may not win you the game, but it will get you some votes.
If he doesn't give up this immunity and stays and wins the next one and makes it to final three, let's just say it's with Parv and Amanda, just it's for ease. Do you think he wins?
I think it depends on who he's against.
But let's say it's Parv and Amanda.
Okay. I think there is potential here.
Oh, and Alexis. Alexis is on the jury. He was in an alliance with Alexis.
Yeah.
Alexis got blindsided by the other two of them.
I think there is potential here for Eric to get enough votes that a split would win him this game.
I agree.
Because, like, there are going to be people who prefer Amanda style versus Parv style.
Yep.
And that may end up splitting 2-2 and Eric coming through with enough votes to get through.
Yeah, and he lost all that through the weeds. And so, like, remembering that as we go through the episode is important because he keeps saying all these things that he thinks are true that I don't feel like came from him at all.
Right. Anyway, Suri is talking about how, hey, can we beat Eric in a challenge? And Amanda says, don't even worry about it. We don't want Eric or Natalie getting immunity. This reward challenge doesn't really matter.
The only part of it that matters is getting not Eric or not Natalie to Exile Island.
Right. And And then Cerise starts the emotional manipulation of, if Amanda can get it in Eric's head that she forgives him, he's going to do whatever we want.
And somehow this works.
And somehow it works. That's the theme of the episode. And somehow it works.
And we haven't seen manipulation Amanda since China, and I missed manipulation Amanda.
Amanda says, hey, Eric, we should team up. The most strategic and the most physical players left at the game, we could make a huge run at this. It'd be great. And Amanda says to us, he's naive. I can push for him to send Parv.
It's the conversation's so funny with the confessional, because Amanda being like, we're in this together. And Eric's like, I feel very stressed. She goes, yeah, you think? And they're like, camaraderie and bonding. And like, yeah. And then the confessional is like, her being like, wow, this is really easy, actually, to make this man do whatever I want.
Yeah. I almost feel bad.
I'm recalling, like, season 4, when you were like, Jared, do you think anybody would give up their immunity? And I now know that was for this episode.
Correct. That was crazy. For this very moment.
Wow.
Here we are. Oh. And she talks him through, like, hey, don't send Natalie. Don't send yourself. Why would you weaken yourself before an immunity challenge? Like, we should send Parv.
You also don't send yourself. You're going to go on a reward if you win.
Correct. And then she says, hey, you're bad at thinking sometimes, Eric, but you're almost there sometimes. Holy hell.
Or no, he said you're good at thinking, Eric. You're almost there sometimes.
Oh, okay. That's not what I heard, but that makes sense, I guess.
And I also, I mean, I will say to Eric's credit, he did outthink me in one way, which I was like, does Eric really think that Parv just wouldn't look for the idol? Apparently she wouldn't.
She didn't. Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Hubris.
Sometimes it works out exactly as planned.
She's fucking suntanning on exile. Whatever, we'll get there.
Anyway, reward challenge. We are asking questions about moments from past seasons of Survivor, and you have to pinpoint which season this is.
Hey, Eric, what the fuck? Because we do this twice a week. We talk about every episode, and I got most of these wrong.
I was at about 75%.
Wow. I also have a really bad memory.
That's fair.
I know I got the Panama one correct of the 4 tribes.
Yep. You got the redacted one right.
Oh, yeah. That one's super easy. I don't think I got any of the other ones right.
Well, let's run through those questions. We're playing for a helicopter to a resort with a massage, a meal, and sending someone to exile. So it's big.
Yeah.
Anyway, first question, who had a pet snake? This one is purposefully obscured, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, at home, not Rupert with Balboa. Right. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, so this is Pearl Islands with Rupert. A shark bit a survivor, and then the person bit the bit the shark back.
I really tried to forget about Hatch and All-Stars. I really buried that.
That's fair. And this one was interesting to me because people, I think, identified that it was Hatch, but put it into Borneo.
Yeah. They also tried to bury Hatch in All-Stars.
Yeah.
Bury the Hatch?
This has been the Survivor Tournament. Someone had to pee on a hand after a jellyfish sting. That was
Marquesas.
That was Marquesas.
I did not remember that.
John and Kathy.
Completely forgot about that.
I remembered more Kathy than John.
Memory hold. In my mind, that had never happened.
Fair. Fall into the fire. Australian Outback. Yep. Redacted. And then 4 separate tribes. This one was easier.
Yeah.
It's Panama. It's Race Wars.
I don't think Parv got a single question right.
Really? Oh, no.
I don't think she did. Maybe she got redacted correct, but I don't remember. Like, she was in last with 0 for a long time, and she didn't get this one correct.
I did not write the final scores, yeah. So that's all right. If so,
headcanon, Parv knows nothing about Survivor to this day.
She just comes, she runs the game, she leaves.
Sure.
Never watches it again.
Best chefs don't cook at home.
Hold on, wait. I was just going to blow on past that. Explain.
You've never heard this before? That, like, people
no.
that are, like, professional chefs, they never cook at home because they do it for a job. So why would you do it when you get home? Because
you have to eat.
Yeah, they order out.
I feel like you're lying.
No, that's, like, a well-known phenomenon. I mean, it's not, like, a hard fast rule. It's not like they never cook at home. Mm-hmm. But, like, very simple meals or, like, pre-prep stuff or takeout, because why would you do what you do at work when you get home? So Parv runs Survivor. Why watch it when she gets home?
Okay. I spilled ramen noodles on the carpet today, so I have nothing to say about being a good cook.
You didn't need to tell anybody. You could have kept that to yourself. You nobody needed to know that, because that's it's not embarrassing, but it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know.
It was slightly embarrassing. I'm not going to lie.
I'm just making fun of you now. But then I felt bad about it halfway through, so I tried to pull the ejector seat.
No. You got to commit to this, Jared. If you're going to make fun of me, make fun of me,
commit
damn it.
To the bullying.
Yeah. You've committed to so much other bullying in my life. Why stop here?
Someone I know calls you my wife.
Who is this?
A friend of mine.
Okay. I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah. I don't know. We've been around too long. Shit's getting weird.
Is this like the third time we've referenced like us together in this episode?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay, I'm going to move on.
I got no short-term memory. The things I say, just, they're gone.
Anyway, Eric wins. He sends Parv to exile instead of Natalie, who asked to be sent there.
Yeah. Eric's mistake number like 6 of the episode, and we're 7 minutes in.
Parv, who didn't say anything, but Amanda was trying to link him into this.
I think Amanda told Parv about this. Like, this isn't a surprise to Parv.
Definitely, but Parv did not say anything to Eric.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be, oh, well, let's get rid of Parv. Like, you know, she's weak. She won't even look for the idol, so you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, she's kind of right.
And yet, it worked. And then takes Amanda on the reward. And boy, the side eye from Natalie.
This is one of the stupidest decisions he can make.
Do you remember?
Notice I say one of.
One of. That is true. Do you remember Michaela Maroney from the Olympics? She got famous for like
the side eye.
Yeah, the side eye. Uh-huh, she got third place, I think. Third or second. And her like watching someone else get a medal. And like, I've heard she's actually like a nicer person.
Sure.
But you take a photo, you can't change what your face is. That's what I was feeling here.
Yeah.
Oh. So she gets back to camp and she is pissed. She's like, why did he send Parv to exile? It does not add up one iota.
It doesn't. Natalie's right. This doesn't make any sense.
Because prior to this, she had this whole conversation saying, hey, we're in this together. Like, we're the only two fans left. Let's try to take out a favorite because they're banded together.
This is why you should be kind and not nice. Because Eric is nice. The last person to talk to him, he's going to be nice to and just do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can hold your ground and get what you want and still be kind and say, like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not a good idea for me. And treat them with respect. But Eric is, like, wrapped up in being a nice guy.
Sure.
Whoops.
Whoops. So, yeah, she's pissed. Ceree's just stoking the fire here.
Like, she's just yanking her around for fun.
Yeah, he's a little weasel. I was jerking Natalie around a little bit.
Oh, my. You don't sex on Survivor. Okay.
Oh, my God. You don't feed her and make Parv strong or make Amanda strong for an immunity challenge.
Yeah, why feed somebody and make them strong if you're, like, for the next challenge if you're going to vote them out?
Yeah. The only pleasure I have in staying home and not having a reward is seeing Natalie freak out here. So funny.
Just stoking the flames.
Stoking the flames. Anyway, helicopter, helicopter. Eric and Amanda are off on an amazing adventure. There's not a whole lot here other than Eric saying, I need to step up. I have to be an ice cream man and not an ice cream boy.
Yeah.
Oh, this is where he says he's the center of everything that's going on. And you can feel the internal eye roll from Amanda. Like, it's there, but I cannot let him know.
Well, it's kind of true, though. Like, because he keeps winning immunity, it's true. It's not that he is the strategic center, but, like, he is this thing that won't go away and gets a vote in an alliance that was previously, like, evenly split. So he became very important. It was the Chris from Vanuatu track. Except then he decided to set himself on fire.
Correct. So yeah, they have a great time. They get massages and foot massages. Eric tells us he's never been to a spa before.
Same.
Does a massage count as a spa?
I've had a massage, but I guess kind of.
It's like in the same world.
Yeah. All on Earth. In the same world.
You got it, Jared.
Hey. Eric thought to himself, what would Ozzy do?
What would Ozzy do here?
And he decided that taking Amanda on a romantic reward would be what Ozzy does.
He just wants to be Ozzy Light.
Basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even in his post game, he's like, my heroes talk to me.
He's cute. He is having a great time. He gets blindsided because he's having a great time and not playing the game like the way he should have. But okay, again, we'll get there.
It's weird to see somebody playing so hard and not at all.
Yes.
At the same time?
Parv doesn't look for the idol at all in exile, so we see her for 30 seconds and then it's like, bye.
Yeah, she's literally like, I'm sunbathing. I'll look for it if I get the chance. It's not a huge deal because it doesn't bite her in the butt. How the fuck do you spend 2 days in exile and not get the idol? Or not look for the idol. Maybe she did. Maybe she did. We only see 5 seconds of 2 days. But, man, come on, Parv.
They get back from the reward, and Suri is so funny here. Don't tell me you didn't have a fun time and you didn't wake up at 3 a.m. to go eat more food. Because I won this reward on my season, and I know exactly what happened here.
She's stoking the flames with plausible deniability.
Uh-huh.
She's making it worse in front of Natalie for Eric. But she's, like, you can't trace that back to her as being malicious.
Correct.
It's, she's so good. I love
Suri. She has not shown any ill will toward Natalie.
No.
Nor to Eric.
No.
And that's kind of what sells this plan later in the episode, is she's just friends with everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, Eric catches on immediately. Natalie's pissed at me. She won't talk to me. And then Eric, being Eric, starts talking to Suri and saying, hey, maybe Yumi and Parv should be final three here. All the while, Natalie walks up on this conversation and hears the entire thing.
So Suri's a genius here.
Uh-huh.
Because she saw Natalie.
Correct.
Like, she's facing her. She saw her. And she just feeds Eric more rope to hang himself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She just keeps giving it to him.
God, he makes it so easy.
And Natalie says, I could have literally bitch slapped him. Something about, like, his mother?
Yeah. Natalie, what was your relationship with your mother like?
I was a little confused on that one. Oh. So then immediately, Suri goes and tells everybody else involved, like, hey, this is the thing that he was saying. And Eric sees this and he's like, I'm so fucking screwed. Oh, no.
I wrote down a direct quote from him in a confessional, which was, I make so many mistakes.
Yes.
It's... There is a certain type of hell in being self-aware that what you're doing is awful, and not like awful like morally, but like awful for your game and like bad, you're making bad decisions and you can't stop yourself.
And it escalates through this episode because at this scene he says, I might have screwed up a bit.
Yeah.
And then we get to, I keep making mistakes. I can't stop.
There is a power in people like, let's say, Boston Rob. That will just be, or Parv, to be honest, that will just be unapologetically evil and own it versus Eric that's trying so hard to be the hero and tripping over his own dick.
Anyway, Amanda pulls him aside and says, hey, here's the ultimatum. You need to pick one side or the other. And yeah, he says, I make so many mistakes.
He's like if Ian from Palau had no game sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he says, I have to win the next immunity or I might be in trouble. Well,
yes, and
you have to win the next immunity and you're going to be in trouble.
God damn it.
Immunity challenge. There are 3 rope coordinate puzzles you have to solve and then pull up pieces that are actual puzzle pieces to find your next coordinates and then solve those 3 puzzles to win the game.
I know that it would not be good sportsmanship. I'm sure it's against the rules and the jury would look down upon it, but I was half expecting one of the women to just follow Eric around and fill in the hole while he was digging.
Honestly, that's not even the like cruelest thing you could do. You could mess with his rope.
Sure. I mean, once he figures it out, Like, I you could get away with it not being, quote-unquote, direct interference if you just put your rope so it's, like, right next to him and then make it look like, I'm just digging and fill in his hole, and, like, everyone would know, but you could plausibly deny it.
Sure, sure, sure.
I don't know, but none of them have thought about that in the last couple of challenges. And last challenge, it was much easier to do that, just shoot other bottles. This one, it would be sketchy.
What is the scope of helping someone or hindering someone in an immunity challenge where you consider it unfair, like an individual immunity challenge?
The problem is it depends so much on the challenge.
Sure.
So, like, if they had all had their individual courses, mm-hmm. you couldn't do that in this one. They're all in the same course, so you could actually kind of fuck with people. It's so dependent on the challenge.
Mm-hmm. There is a future one that still kind of makes me mad to this day,
huh,
where someone, no interference was made, but there was a portion that someone else did for another contestant that, while technically not bending the rules, made me real mad.
Nobody says a golden retriever can't sub in and do the challenge.
Anyway, yeah, so you gotta do those three puzzles. It's kind of chaotic having three rope coordinates.
Yeah.
Like, having everyone in the same coordinate.
It's kind of a dud of a challenge, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it doesn't help that Eric runs away with it, but the puzzles aren't that complicated.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a version of this before, but usually there's something else on it, and this one's just kind of, once somebody pulls away, it's over.
I don't think it's a dud of a challenge. I think, unfortunately, Eric is far more athletic than any of these women.
Sure.
And also,
you're
right.
He's a bit of a challenge beast.
I think the puzzles should have gotten progressively more difficult.
Instead of easier?
They didn't get easier, because the last one is the most difficult puzzle. However,
I disagree.
Really?
I think the last one's the easiest. You're spelling out a word, and like an obvious word.
But there are more pieces.
I guess so. Yeah, okay.
I think it should have gone further.
I think the problem is it takes so much longer to dig than to make the puzzle. So if you have, somebody's not going to catch up while you're making the puzzle.
Right.
They're just going to get further behind.
Anyway, Eric gets into the lead, and then he just never looks back. He is athletically dominant here, and Parv is real funny. She's just digging, having a great time, and Jeff is just talking to her, really.
Yeah. Parv, not in this challenge at all. Okay, Jeff.
I love those moments.
Me too.
Just salty at Jeff. So, yeah. The only thing here that I thought was really interesting is Eric almost self-sabotages by throwing his pieces around when he's so far in the lead. Like, he almost lost a piece to the ground, you know,
mm-hmm.
very similar to China, but that was on purpose.
Well, we've heard it a couple times, both in the more context and from the contestants, that Eric is a monster in challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he sees red. He almost killed Yao Man.
Correct.
So that makes sense. He lost himself. There was mom's spaghetti on his sweater already.
Were his knees weak?
His knees weak.
Knees weak.
Knees weak.
Anyway, Eric wins the immunity challenge.
Said so many words today.
Eric wins the immunity challenge, and it's a done deal. He's safe. I loved, and I wrote this down, that Jeff says a guaranteed spot in the final four. And I went, is it though?
To whoever has the necklace.
Correct. But he says Eric has a guaranteed spot in the final four. And you know, he did have it. He just gave it away.
That's true, yeah. Oh. Yeah, wow.
So then we transition to the section I like to call, could we make him do it?
To the section of, nobody's this stupid.
And yet, it's literally just the women concocting this plan, like, hey, that sucks. But what if? Because Natalie straight out asks, she's like, hey, it's me tonight, right? And Cerise says, yeah, probably.
Which, yeah.
So Natalie, nothing to lose, concocts his plan. Hey, what if I get him to give
me... No, Cerise concocts the plan.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure, because Natalie, it says something like, nobody's that stupid, and Parv goes... Natalie says, who would fall for that? And Parv says, Ozzy, Jason, Eric. Eric belongs in that club. Which is pretty funny. And also, holy shit, Ozzy catching strays being grouped in with Jason.
It is this fun, unifying moment of all these women coming together to just collectively put knives into Eric's back.
And radical honesty. We've seen it two episodes in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Last episode, it was Ceri to Amanda. Hey, I'm going to vote for you. I wish I didn't have to, but it doesn't make any sense for me not to. And then this episode, Natalie, we're going to vote for you. There's one way we won't, but otherwise we're going to have to.
Uh-huh. And so there are two portions to this plan. One, the, hey, make him feel like he cannot win this game as things stand. Make him feel like he has screwed up. He has no relationships here at camp. He has no relationships on jury.
This is professional gaslighting.
Yes. And then simultaneously create this other of these two people who are unwilling to work with him and hate his guts in Amanda and Parv. And these two people, they're just doing good cop, bad cop.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Like, hey, buddy, you got to change your game up. You've made a lot of mistakes. I'm going to do you a favor.
Which helps a lot that Eric feels like he's made all these mistakes.
Yeah.
And I want to, like, the focus could so easily, and I feel like this is just repeating the Jason stuff and the Ozzy stuff, but, like, the focus could so easily be on how dumb Eric is for mm-hmm. this. But the women here deserve so much credit.
They did a great job here.
The conversations they have with him, they don't overpush.
Nope.
They don't make it too obvious. Like, they execute this plan so well. There is, Natalie doesn't break. She doesn't make it obvious that this is her plan. She, the whole, like, listen, I know this is crazy. This is the only way Suri will do this, is masterful. Like, I would almost believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't do what Eric did, I would hope, but it's so well done.
And here's where I give Eric credit. He does not even want to entertain the idea from the start.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, 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 I'm keeping this. Okay, wait. And then the earworm starts crawling through him, and he's starting to feel this pressure of, hey, maybe I can't win this game. Maybe I have to do something here.
Yeah.
And like I said, they concoct this plan of these two people saying, hey, no, we're at your side, but I need you to show me some form of trust here, and giving away that immunity necklace is the biggest way to do it.
It makes so much sense. Like, their plan does not lack logic. It's mm-hmm. not give it away for shits and giggles. It's, hey, we're all kind of mad at you
mm-hmm.
because you keep lying, and you've been planting that seed for days without knowing this is what it would blossom into, and your word doesn't mean anything to us anymore, so we need an action. Now, the part where I kind of lose the thread for Eric is the whole reason why he wants to go after Amanda is because Natalie and Amanda are the big threats to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he could keep the necklace and get rid of Natalie, but he wants to, okay, win Natalie back over and get rid of Amanda. But then he's worried that Parv found the idol, so they're going to go after Parv.
Yeah.
But then you are also missing your original stated objective, which is I need to get rid of Amanda and Natalie. And that's not the biggest deal in it, but it really just shows how wrapped around the axle Eric got
mm-hmm.
to the point that he has lost what his goal was.
He got lost in the flood of information, and he could not bury himself out.
Yeah.
So that all happens. That's all pre-tribal. And was there anything else pre-tribal you wanted to talk about?
I mean, we kind of talked about it all at different points in the episode, scattershot. Right. Like, it's excellent.
So we start tribal, and Eric's like, hey, I needed to redeem myself to Amanda in taking her to reward to bury the hatchet. And this is kind of when everything goes sideways, because they start piling on him. And
yeah, Suri and Natalie are going to stay quiet. Amanda yep. and Parv are going to beat him up. Yeah.
And it works flawlessly.
Yep.
Parv talks about how she had a little vacation on Exile. She wasn't doing a whole lot. But Eric was running around doing all these lies and were trying to manipulate everyone. And I wasn't there for it, but I heard it wasn't great.
It's, God, they're so good. The four of them are so good.
Mm-hmm. So Eric says, I feel like I need to come here and I need to do something. And they just keep burying him. Like, you're so full of crap. Parv says, you've lost a lot of respect from us.
It's, this part gets hard to watch because I think that they all actually like Eric and mm-hmm. think that he's a good person, and they are burying him for the game, and it's the right thing to do. But man, this level of gaslighting is so hard to watch.
So he's feeling it from people sitting next to him. he's looking at the jury and he says, I don't see any friendly faces on the jury.
They have him so twisted around that he, like, remember the list I said at the top of the episode?
Yeah.
They're, most of that jury, in at least from a viewer's perspective, maybe listeners will say that we're wrong, don't have any ill will towards you at all, Eric.
So then here comes in Suri, and she's like, hey, you know what? Saying sorry is a good first step. And you know what? Saying things is great. Like, you want to change, you want to make things better, but actions are what's important here. And doing something is way more important than just saying something. And in the most...
It's so strong. It's so strong. The most, like, good. She's so good.
Beautifully crafted. This is a rapier. This isn't a broadsword.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, God. I love Suri. I want her to win this game. My, you know, I'm just going to say, for every future season, if Suri is on it, I'm predicting her to win. I don't care. I'm manifesting.
All right.
I did it for this season. I will do it for any season Suri is on.
Fair. So, Eric makes the historic blunder of giving away the immunity necklace and gives it to Natalie in a show of his, hey, I want to work to all us three, Natalie, Suri, me.
Yeah.
I want to make this work. And then, so what does Survivor do? They show every single vote.
And voting confessional.
And voting confessional.
Because why not?
Yeah. We're dunking this man into the earth. He is the stupidest player in Survivor ever.
But in a way that doesn't feel mean. Like, it doesn't feel like the
show
is... Par feels a little mean. That's true. But the camera doesn't feel like it's looking at Eric going, haha, point and laugh at that fucking idiot over there. Which is kind of refreshing.
Yes.
Because I feel like there's a world in which you could splice Eric's shit together to make him look like a really bad person.
They toe the line, though. Because they show James saying, I'm not the dumbest Survivor player ever, immediately after he got voted out.
I mean, it is. It's dumb. It's objectively dumb. But I think that it's more naive. And the camera is like, oh, Eric, poor boy. Mm-hmm. Rather than like, wow, look at this guy who is an unredeemable idiot.
And here's where I'm going to pull it back from the beginning, where I say, I don't blame him as much as I probably did watching this first time. Because he, in his mind, feels like he can't win right now. He needs to shake something up and he needs to make something happen. He doesn't have the societal pull or the social pull to make something happen that way.
Yeah.
But he feels like this is a way for him to redeem himself give him a chance.
And it's also important to remember that he's a big Survivor fan.
Yes.
And we are early in Survivor still, but the last few winners have made moves.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric doesn't have a good resume.
No.
And so he sees this deal where people that he idolizes, like he idolizes Suri, and is telling him, hey, this will help your resume. This is the move that you need. And sure, you look at the end result, you look at all the confessionals that we know, you look at it with the benefit of not being gaslit in person for several days, and you go, that's stupid. But when you put yourself in his shoes, you can see the math that got him there.
Mm-hmm.
This is the move that could win me the game, and we want players who take risks. Now, that's a stupid-ass risk, and it's not one that a Survivor player should ever make, but it's not... It's not completely batshit insane.
No.
It's not random. It's not something that he did like off the cuff and was like, oh yeah, sure, whatever, I'll give this away. The result he got to is based on calculations. He is horrible at math.
Yeah. And you know what? Time to say it now. Eric gets voted out in a sweep. And as he goes up to walk and vote his vote, everyone's laughing at him.
Yeah.
The jury is laughing at him.
The minute he gives the necklace away, James is laughing at him.
Yeah. I feel bad.
Yeah.
How do you think Eric does in Future Survivor?
A heart of gold and an ass of dumb. That's Eric. I mean, he's a monster in challenges. He's good. He's really good.
Mm-hmm.
God, his social game's so bad. He's so min-maxed. But I think that comes with, like, youth and naivete and being such a fan of the game has actually hurt him. Mm-hmm. Like, if he didn't know Survivor, I think he would have been a much better Survivor player.
I don't know about that.
See, I do.
I think it would get him through this.
I think Eric was hurt so much by being on this season because he idolized these people. Mm. If he was just on Token Sheens or China or whatever, it wouldn't... I think the next one's Token Sheens. I don't know Token Sheens, but that's... listener Reed says that's that they're on that one that's still listening to this. Whatever.
Gabon is next.
Oh, okay. I don't know Gabon.
Then Token Sheens.
Okay. If he's on any of those seasons, I don't think he makes these mistakes. I think it's the fact that it is Suri, someone he watched when he was, like, you know, 17 years old and was, like, geeking out about, that he wants to believe them. So, like, I think Eric is, like, a golden boy type that I don't... He needs someone that can run the social game for him, clearly. Mm. And he made it really far. He made it to Final Five. He made it way farther than I thought he was going to. I guess most of the time I think he goes home earlier, but I think his ceiling is a potential winner.
Yeah.
Especially with a bitter jury against some of the other people. Like, people like Eric. He stuck around this long because people like him.
And that's the kicker. Because post-Survivor, people like Eric. He is a nice guy.
That's good.
Fans love him.
I was worried that he was going to be, like... Well, I was worried one of two things. Either America's reaction was, God, these women suck. Because women are held to higher standards and aren't allowed to be mean on TV without being hated, or that Eric was gonna be ostracized as like this idiot.
So he's kind of loved, like, fans love him, he's nice, he got married.
I'm assuming he doesn't come back.
So Eric does come back.
Wait, what?
Eric comes back in season 26.
Oh my god. Okay,
so we have a while before.
Which one
Eric
is that
comes
one
back? Survivor Karamoan.
What is the theme?
I'm going to be honest. This is kind of in the dead zone of Survivor for me.
Gotcha.
This is an area that I don't 100% remember. It's, and get this one, it's very funny to me. Fans versus Favorites 2.
You got to be fucking kidding me.
No, it's perfect. He came full circle.
That's hilarious.
So honestly, it's fun to me that you can have a moment like that and be loved and be embraced by the community enough that they're like, hell, let's bring this guy back. Perfect.
He went from a fan to a favorite.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's great. He has a small freelance business, Dabu Doodles.
Fuck off.
It's
okay.
Great. And we're expecting their first child in 2021 when this article was written.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Proudest moment of Survivor every day when I talk to fans and other Survivor contestants online. He is a...
Eric could probably come on. We should reach out.
We should reach out to him. He is a regular on PG's Twitch channel.
Oh, okay.
That's so funny. I'm sure that's probably settled down, or maybe she's still doing Twitch. I don't know.
Who's to say?
Twitch is in a different world than it was in 2021.
Yeah.
No major regrets, just small what ifs.
I think there should be one major regret. I think you should have one.
Yeah. Anyway. I'll save rest for next time when we see him on Karamoan.
Cool. Protagonist.
Your
Sorry.
Protagonist of the episode.
I think it's Suri.
Mm.
Suri hasn't really gotten much protagonist in a long time, despite me hoping that she's the winner. But, I mean, she's the one that... It could be any of those three women, to be fair. Not Natalie as much. I think that the other three are the ones pulling the strings. And you could make an argument for Eric, I suppose. But Cerie's the one, like, I remember her being the one that has the plan on the beach. But either way, she's the one that makes it work. Mm-hmm. She's the one that, like, is talking to Eric and makes this plan work. She's the one we hear a lot about on the beach with Natalie. Yeah.
That's
but it's not the strongest protagonist episode. It is, the whole Black Widows Alliance is very ensemble, so.
Yeah, this is about as close to an ensemble episode as we're gonna get.
We get a lot of them.
Yeah. All right, then that's the end of that episode. It was a ride.
I love the Black Widows Alliance.
The Black Widow Brigade.
Yes, that's what it is. Black Widow Brigade. I was right though. They stuck to the end, minus when they had to vote out Alexis because of immunity.
Right.
They couldn't get it away from him then, I guess.
No one would be that stupid.
No.
Oops.
Whoops.
Again, love you, Eric. This is a...
Damn.
This hurts.
Yeah.
Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turn Back Time podcast. Jared, anything you'd like to promote?
Come see Hope Springs Eternal if you're in the Chicagoland area. It'll be at the Edge Off-Broadway Theater on April 1st and April 7th. So that's a Monday and then a Tuesday, about a week later at 7:30 p.m.
Nice.
It's a stage reading plus, so we'll have a bunch of tech elements. It's basically like a one-night full performance. Just, you know, some tech elements scaled back. Actors might still have scripts in their hands, but they'll be very, very familiar with it. We'll have rehearsals and all of that. So it's halfway between a staged reading and a full performance.
Cool.
What about you, Steven?
I'm going to promote sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like I haven't slept well lately. And it's driving me a little nuts.
I got a dinner after this and then a party.
You're crazy.
For my co-host, Jared, this is Steven.
For my host, Steven, this is Jared.
Nappy time.
Okay.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.